Good morning, everyone. This is Johnny Tan, author of From My Mama's Kitchen, Food for the Soul, Recipes for Living. Happy Wednesday and welcome to From My Mama's Kitchen Talk Radio Show. Here's a quick announcement. Our June heart-centered and passion-driven Inspirations for Better Living digital magazine designed to help moms build a better future for themselves, their families, and loved ones is now live at inspirationsforbetterliving.com. By the way, our July's edition will be live this weekend. June's theme is Happy Graduation, Dream, Achieve, Become, and a Father's Day Special Tribute. July's theme is A Summer of Smile and Happiness, Our Blessed Moments. The magazine offers inspirational stories from our dedicated team of experts to help you navigate your current situation with confidence in your motherhood journey as the COO, if not the CEO, of your family. So please go to inspirationsforbetterliving.com to treat yourself to some engaging, entertaining, and enlightening stories. You deserve it. As for our radio show today, my guest for this morning is Kalyani Sundari. Brazilian-born Kalyani, also known as Jane Villa-Guerre, is a spiritually inspired visionary, modern mystic, producer, artist, focalizer of sacred circles, and founder of Stargate Alliance Films and Media. Her divine mission is to inspire humanity by offering alternative visions, information, and empowering tools for self and global soul transformation. Upon discovering her divine singing voice, Kalyani uses her musical gift to connect people to the content and soul of what represents humanity at its best. Her musical style elegantly blends exotic world music and with complex transcendent qualities. Emotive and alluring, her vocal summons operatic and Gregorian style, while her music uniquely delves into dramatic contemporary orchestration, profoundly rich in structure. Kalyani's debut single and music video in 2014, Namu's Invocation, brings forth the energetic landscape of wordless intonation to heighten vibration. It seamlessly weaves vision of sensuality into primordial context. A powerful second release, Tears of Inanna, in 2018, is a beautiful manifestation of the role of the sacred feminine throughout history. Kalyani's latest and timely soulful release, the One Earth music video, celebrates the earth, inspiring hope and embracing the beauty of human connection. With nature as a backdrop, the One Earth video features her voice expressing the message of humanity's oneness with the earth. Opening with a captivating view of Earth from space, reminding us that we are all part of the same planet race. As for our kitchen table conversation this morning, Kalyani and I will be talking about her remarkable life's journey and how we can connect with our Earth through a new, fresh perspective from her latest music video, One Earth. Good morning, Kalyani. Happy Wednesday and welcome to From My Mama's Kitchen Talk Radio. How are you doing today?
I'm doing great. Good morning, Johnny.
Wonderful. It is a pleasure to have you with me this morning. The last time you were a guest on From My Mama's Kitchen Talk Radio was in February of 2018, and we talked about the release of your second music video, Tears of Inanna. Today, I am extremely excited to learn about your latest release, One Earth, and your mission and vision for the future with Stargate Alliance. So let us talk and get started with getting to know you a little bit better. Please give us a quick walkthrough of your life from childhood to the present moment.
Mm-hmm. That's going to be just, yeah, a snippet, right?
Oh, we have the whole hour now. You can start with, it all began.
Oh, nice. Okay, it all began in Rio de Janeiro, Brazil.
There you go.
So, yeah, growing up in Brazil was, I grew up very freely, because there was not a lot of structure. I was in, a lower middle class family and went to public school for 4 hours a day. and there were a lot of children in the neighborhood. I played a lot on the streets, and there was a lot of, you know, just hopping on trees and hopscotch and rollerblading, bike riding, and I always liked to be on top of trees. It was my thing to be up on top somewhere, seeing everything from above. Yeah, and Brazil is a very spiritual country, and I had a lot of experiences there with, you know, just witnessing trans-channeling. Even in my family, there was a very powerful medium. And one of the things that I realized early on was the soul awareness growing in me, understanding that there is much more to it, you know, than what the eyes can see, right? So growing up, I just, you know, absorbed all of that, and I became very spiritually curious, I guess you could say, to a very intense degree. You know, and my sister, I had a sister, she was going through similar experiences as I did, but there was a more intense curiosity in my being than about the architecture of the universe and what lies beyond our, you know, five senses. So I did a lot of exploration, but when I was about 8.5 or 9 years old, I don't want to skip, but I had a phase in very early on, I think around 7, where I was molested a couple of times, and it became a traumatic thing. And my mother, of course, it is traumatic, you know. My mother took me to the doctors and therapists, and I couldn't speak. And I was... you know, I felt ashamed, and I internalized the trauma, you know, and that phase went on for a good year or so. And around, like I said, 8.5 or 9, I had what some, you know, gurus have explained to me. It was a samadhi experience. I don't know. For many, many years, I actually repressed that memory, but I, an easy way to understand, I felt like I had an out of body experience, like an astral projection would be a better way to understand it. But I came home from school, and I was a very active child. I was very happy. I always liked to make people laugh, and I was super, super active. And, but after this episode, I became very, a lot more, you know, self-aware, and kind of quieted me. This day I arrived from school, and I just felt guided to go to my bedroom, and I had a bunk bed, and I laid on my bunk bed, and I lay there, and I looked up into the ceiling, and all of a sudden I could see through the ceiling. I could see the cosmos, the universe, and I felt I felt I could see the earth. I started to see myself there and looking down over the earth. And this experience was profound because I was moving slowly farther away from the planet. And there was this revolving question, what was there before all of this, before what I'm seeing, before right now, right? And I could see the earth become very rich and lush, a lot more green. And then my, you know, the vision was becoming wider and wider, and I was higher and higher. And I could see at some point the whole solar system, right? And I'm like 8.5 or 9. I don't even think, I don't remember ever being shown a picture of the solar system or anything like that. But I could see all the planets in surrounding our sun, and the question kept revolving in the recess of my little mind, going like, "What? Show me more. Show me before. And the planets started to pop. And I call it popping because they were just disappearing one by one. And at the same time, I'm moving, I would say backwards, right? Not backwards, but I'm moving farther away from the solar system and slowly seeing the planets disappear. And the question is just ongoing. Show me, okay, and before. Very interesting. Everything started to disappear. I could see galaxies, you know, these clusters of stars in many different directions. And the clusters of stars started to disappear, the galaxies disappear, which is another concept I wasn't sure I ever had at that age. But when the memory came back to me, I remember seeing all of that and not quite understanding, but fascinated by it. Mm-hmm. And everything started to pop. And I found myself in what today we understand as the void, right? Mm-hmm. So I was just there alone in that darkness without anything. And I said, because my mother, here's another important point. My mother, one of the first memories I have is my mother teaching me to pray. And I was still in the crib. And she was actually, my sister was 2.5 years older. So she would go every night, put me in the crib, kiss me goodnight, and then would go to my sister and teach her the sign of the cross and start praying with her. Because she was, you know, I think she was maybe 4, you know, maybe I was 1.5. I'm not sure exactly. But my mother remembers this, you know. She remembered this and told me to. And I felt left out of something so special, this special bond she had with my sister. I wasn't able to understand that the reason why she didn't do that to me is because my sister was older and she could speak. I didn't, but a child, a baby, you know, a toddler doesn't have this, oh, it's because she's older. We don't feel there's any difference, you know, that mental space, in that developmental stage, there is no difference. So I felt really hurt, you know, and one of the nights I just started to cry as she's teaching my sister, and she comes to me and I just grab her hand and I smear it on my face, basically, you know. I just hold her fingers because I want her. So she giggled and she said, oh, okay. So she held my hand and she helped me learn how to do that. And so I prayed a lot and I, you know, it was like a regular thing. It was like a routine that my mother had with us every night until we became preteens or teenagers. You know, she sat by our bedside and she did several prayers because my mother grew up in Portugal and she grew up, my grandfather was a nobleman, actually. And so the clergy and the nobility were very close, even though Republic had already established itself, politically speaking, in Portugal.
Right.
There was that remaining respect for nobility. And the church was very close. So there was a big church next to my mother's house, and it was a solarium home. It was this massive, beautiful. I went there for the first time, actually, in 2021. It was beautiful to see where she was born. I don't know what took me forever to go, but, you know, so she used to tiptoe into the chapel or the church and pick up baby Jesus and bring it to her bed. It was like her doll.
Yeah,
She used to play with it. So she has this deep connection. She used to confess almost daily, you know. When she came to Brazil, she was about 12, and then she got married at 18, and then I was born when she was about 22. At that time, she read a book on the Holy Inquisition, and she was horrified by what the institution of what is, you know, every religion is organized, institutionalized spirituality, right?
Right.
And what the power of that has created such devastation in the world. And she was so horrified. She said, I don't want to go to church anymore. It's not for me. But she believed in the power of prayer, and she was deeply connected to Mother Mary and baby Jesus, you know. So I grew up in this environment, and I prayed a lot. And And when this experience happened that I was out in the cosmos and I found myself alone, I thought to myself, this must be where God lives, right? Mm-hmm. This must be where God is or God lives. As a child, as a young girl, that's what came to me. But I was alone. So I was just looking around and I felt a sense of peace. I wasn't afraid. I felt really good, but I wanted to know more, of course, the revolving question. And I said, can you show me what was before God, if anything? And because in my innocence, I didn't have any imprints or fear.
Mm-hmm.
I was just flowing with the natural curiosity, you know, my spiritual curiosity. I wanted to know if there was anything else before God. If there was anything, I would like to know what that is. So in that moment, I was brought back to my body at fast speed. It was like crashing speed, mm-hmm. I called. And I just, you know, it was like I could almost feel the impact. And I sat up straight as if like waking up from a bad dream, right?
Mm-hmm.
So my heart was pounding. It was almost like I was taken out of it in a snap, you know. And when I opened my eyes, I couldn't remember who I was. I couldn't remember anything. I couldn't remember. I had a family, my mother, my grandmother, my sister, nothing. I could not remember anything. I didn't know the name for anything. I didn't know where I was, what that was. It was just a complete erasure of my identity. So, you know, in spiritual terms, they call that loss of identity, a spiritual awakening of sorts, right?
Mm-hmm.
So I got down from, I don't know how long I was there, to be honest, terrified, you know, and a lot of people say, oh, this is, experiences are very enlightening and you feel the oneness with the world. No, it was absolutely terrifying. And I don't know if people who have experienced that before, like some gurus have explained they've had that.
Mm-hmm.
As a child, actually, there's one of them, I don't know if it's Babaji. There's one guru that had a similar experience at the same age, but they don't explain much more. And what I felt actually was terrifying. I don't know if it's because I was so young, to find yourself in a place that you don't have any connection to.
Right.
It's terrifying, and you don't know where you belong. If you belong, what is that? And you feel lost, you know. So I ran out of the door at one point, and I started running in the street. I just ran for maybe a block or two, and I started to regain my memory. And upon remembering my name and my mom and my family, I felt a deep sense of relief, like, it was like a balm of grace. And, you know, when I questioned myself later in life saying, why did I have that experience? Why? What did that mean? To me, it meant that when you take God out of the equation, before God, because my question was, show me before God, what exists without God, without spirit, source, a sense of a greater good, a much more expanded intelligence that's loving and that organizes the universe in some way, right?
Yes,
it could be just consciousness, as the Indians explain. It's a level of existing where maybe there is not just one God, maybe there is a consciousness and an organizing awareness that, you know. So I feel that the response was by bringing me back and erasing all my sense of belonging, connecting, and love, because I felt empty. I knew that I couldn't remember anything, but I knew that I wanted to remember. I desperately ran through the streets, and my heart was pounding, and I thought I had lost my mind. And that's why I repressed that memory, because I said, if I tell anybody, they're going to think I'm crazy. So I repressed, and I wanted to forget because it was so terrifying, and I never wanted it to happen again. So the idea that without God, you know, or however you want to refer mm-hmm. to the spirit, there is no sense of belonging, no connection, and there is no sense of love, you know, mm-hmm. that relating, the relationships are filled with spirit. Our relationships, mm-hmm. how we relate to one another, the love and caring and belonging, the sense of belonging, all of that is coming from God. It's possible because of consciousness and source, right?
Right, right. So, interesting.
Yeah, so that's something that I was afraid to touch for a long time because my memory box, I was still a child. So when I thought of it, it made me very nervous, right?
Very interesting. Very, very interesting. How did that spiritual experience lead you to another spiritual experience where you started to go with the name Kalyani?
Oh, that was way, way later. That was mm-hmm. just before I was about to release Memories and Vacation. I think that there was so much that came before that, which was the second epiphany, as you called it before, I had. It was like 30 years later when my marriage was falling apart and I had Kuan Yin come into my universe, you know, my life, and mm-hmm. I had not known who she was. Like, you know, in the article I wrote for your magazine, I talk about how through my teen years, I became really, I became like an explorer, a seeker, and I explored many different avenues of practices and spirituality, yoga, and I explored different philosophies like Cartesius, you know, Christian rationalism, even Baptist church, and I studied a lot of the practices and philosophies of Cartesianism, which is very beautiful. I really recommend anybody who wants to understand karmic laws and life after death and all of that, the writings of Allan Kardec. I was learning about healing and hands-on healing. I practiced hands-on healing as a teenager as well. I just loved everything that was not from this world, pretty much. I wanted to know everything about not being here. It's so funny. But
well,
being
there's
here
something
is very
special.
Yeah?
There's something very special about you. You sense that as a child. And as you grow, what I coin, and I always tell people this, life is a buffet line. So you got the flavor, everything they have to offer. Now, if you like it, go back for seconds. But
that's right. That's
you have
right.
to go flavor it so that you have a situation in your life that you can make informed decisions, for lack of a better term, right? And that's the concept. Mm-hmm. And you have this beautiful journey that you went through, even as a young child, the experience of like, wow, this is kind of weird in some ways. I'm not experiencing things that, I don't know, maybe other kids do. I have no idea. But certainly it's weird for me. And that sort of is a building block for you each time. And it's a foundation that you have built to the beautiful you right now with all the gifts that you have. And that's fascinating. So when did that spiritual feeling, the spiritual movement within you moved you to be involved with music and discovering your musical talent and gifts?
Yeah, that's a loaded question, as I always say. I around the time of my divorce, I started, first of all, I don't know if I ever mentioned that to you or on the when I realized what was happening and this, I had dreams with Kuan Yin, the goddess of compassion. I had never known mm-hmm. about her.
Mm-hmm.
And I had visions and a lot of synchronicities, strange synchronicities. And I mean, there's so many stories. But I actually stopped eating for almost a year. And
wow.
to stay alive, I just drank a green powder. The only thing I felt guided to put in my body was greens powder on apple juice. I had two glasses. I would put two heaping tablespoons of greens. At mm-hmm. that time, this was in 2003, okay? There wasn't much awareness of these green powders, but I was feeling completely guided by spirit. My house, mm-hmm. my life, as I knew it, was falling apart. I had four kids. Three of them were under five and under. And my life was falling apart, you know. And I just couldn't, and this presence of this beautiful entity around me was so strong that, you know, I couldn't eat food. Food looked like plastic to me. And I think it's because of the influence of this high vibrational entity, like the goddess of compassion, Kuan Yin, is. I couldn't eat. It went on for almost a year, and I was so, my weight was so low. I think I was 190 pounds. I mean, what do you call it? Like 90 pounds, right? 90, because mm-hmm, mm-hmm. I think in kilos.
Yes.
I was down to 90 pounds at one point, and I would get like my annual checkup, and the doctor took my blood test, and he said, "What are you doing? Because I've never seen blood like yours. It's like gold." And I said, "Well, I just been drinking this green powder." And he said, "Whatever you're doing, just keep doing it." And I was super thin, but I was hyper healthy. And it was almost like I was worried about not being strong enough to raise my kids because I was so devastated and I couldn't eat. And there was this beautiful, mystical energy around me that I couldn't understand, but was guiding me, I felt, each step of the way. So here is this awareness of, and I was praying so much. Like I said, when my marriage started breaking down, I started to pray more. And I prayed this prece of Caritas. Caritas is the name of this prayer, and it's available if you want to Google it. Beautiful. And I prayed that with all my heart every morning and night before I took my foot off the ground and before I put my feet on the ground again, I would pray that prayer. And I was very long, and that's when these things started to happen, you know, this presence and this guidance. And but this was a prayer, funny enough, to Lord Jesus, right? It's still a dogma prayer. It's still connected to the structure of the church and all of that. But it's a powerful, powerful one. And I always say, I pray to the Lord and the lady came, Lady Kuan Yin, right? And I think this is a beautiful indication of, you know, the energy of the divine masculine. Just like for people who are Christians, they know that, you know, when Mary appears in miracles like Garibaldi or Fatima, she always has baby Jesus. And that Jesus always say, you know, "Treat my mother as you treat me. You know, we are one. We're connected." And I feel like there's been an awakening of consciousness in our historical time. And some people say since the end of the Mayan calendar, which was 2012, there's been an upsurging of consciousness towards recognizing and acknowledging with greater reverence the presence of the divine feminine, which most institutionalized religions had laid aside and even had stripped women of the ability or the opportunity to serve as messengers of God, right? And today, there's been a lot of transformation, but our Catholic Church still has not stepped up to allow women to become priests of the church, right? So it's an ongoing process, and this awareness made me awaken this burning flame in my heart and my belly to give voice to the divine feminine. There is this beautiful, beautiful passion that grew inside of me where all of this came from, and the music came from. And so I hope that explains. And then, you know, knowing that I was about to launch, I wanted my the muse in me to have its own name. And I was doing meditation at the time. I had done Kriya training at Self-Realization Fellowship. I had studied. I was a volunteer there for a few years and a student. And I was doing a lot of meditation during my training as well on the Spiritual Psychology Master's Program. Because, you know, I went to UCLA for psychology. Then I did, after my separation, I went to USM for a spiritual psychology program. And at the same time, I was doing Kriya training at Self-Realization Fellowship, you know, Yogananda legacy, Yogananda Ji's legacy. So all of this, you know, kind of gave birth to this desire to give voice. And actually, my production company, I had worked on a project that was coming to completion. It was called Peace Link Live. And I thought to myself, my next project is going to be what I want to do instead of coming into collaboration with other people. I just want to focus on creating a documentary about the Divine Feminine. And because I had also done a documentary on love, which is Secrets of Love, we had a lot of problems licensing music. And during meditation, I got that I was supposed to create the music. And I said to Spirit, that can't be true. I can't do music. I was not trained for music. I never learned how to sing. How do you? And repeatedly, over and over again, as I went into meditation, trying to think, how am I going to resolve the problem? Because music, right?
Right,
you watch
right.
Film that has no music, it's dead. It's like it has no soul. The moving of your, you know, feeling, the feeling,
right.
The flow of the feeling, the soul of the story is embedded in the notes that are flowing behind, you know, the scenes. It's just very powerful. And I thought this movie has to have really, really beautiful music, and it has to be a very special kind of music. And one day I just said, you know what? If I keep getting this in meditation, there has to be, I have to learn to get my head out of the way, get my mind out of the way, my limited thinking, and just think that if Spirit wants me to do it, there must be a reason why. And I just opened my mind slightly, slowly, to just feel into the possibility that maybe I could. If I could, let me see, how would it be? So it was just a contemplation. I started writing notes down. And all of a sudden, Spirit introduced me to the person who was supposed to write the music for me or with me, right? Because I had no musical training. And that, so that's how the Muslim Vocation came about. And how my name came about during meditation as well.
That's beautiful.
Yeah, Kadiani, yeah.
That's beautiful. How about us listening to Namu Invocation, and then we can continue the conversation afterwards?
Sounds wonderful.
Okay, let us do just that. Let's see here. Oh, it's so powerful. Very, very powerful. Mm-hmm. It's
yeah.
amazing. It really is. And, you know, it's when I hear the music, and again, we have talked about this in 2015, and what's interesting about it, I love it so much I kept it on my Apple Music because it's such a beautiful, powerful song. And it really moved you when you kind of really sit and just absorb the musical vibrations, for lack of a better term. And that's one of the things that I want to ask you, is there a correlation between musical vibration and our personal well-being?
Of course. Absolutely. I think we are pure vibration, you know, and science and quantum physics are now able to explain how that is, you know, how vibration is really the essence of matter. So because of that, when you really understand that, you understand how important it is to mind the quality of your vibration, and I feel through music and your thought forms, your thought patterns, because your thoughts are vibration, because you know, where thought goes, as they say, energy flows, or so your thought forms will also affect your state of being, because it creates a vibratory an emotional frequency, let's say, a feeling frequency, because emotions are vibration. So the thoughts will ignite the vibratory frequency. And then how do you aid your frequency if you are going through a difficult time in your life and you can't control, let's say, your thoughts, right? You're having negative thought patterns, or you are feeling victimized, or upset, or, you know, you don't understand your circumstances. Some people feel, you know, God has forgotten me. What's happening? And it's all a test of our faith. And how can we, that's where I feel music is such medicine, because if you choose high quality frequency sounds, and I particularly prefer the ones that have no words, because when you put words on it, you're going to be taken into a vibrational frequency of your interpretation of those words. And a lot of music with words, you know, unfortunately talk about, and not unfortunate, sometimes we want to hear songs that reflect experiences that we are sharing, like heartbreak, right? And, you know, however it is. And we want to know that we're not alone, that you know, that musician has, you know, represented what we're going through. And we feel like, you know, we can handle things better because other people have gone through it. This is one of the things that music brings. But also, if you listen to high-frequency music, something that feels good, that's pure vibratory, I would say things like lounge music and Buddha bar and some of these that has no word on it, you're going to be able to raise the vibratory frequency, and you're going to be able to get out of the loop in your mind and until you break the pattern of thinking. And I think music can aid on that, but of course, when you stop listening to the music, the thought patterns are there. So there's much that you can do as well on the side, like therapy, meditation, and and reframing your reality, you know, just trying to understand that what happens to you, it's through you and it's for you. It's not, you know, it's not against you.
Right. It's fascinating because you mentioned the word frequency, and that's the beauty of just music alone. And the presentation video that you did in Namu's Invocation was just phenomenal as well. So as you view, like, you know, when you see things, that affects you. And then you have this beautiful music that sort of encapsulates you, that changes the dynamics within your very makeup, I guess, for lack of a better term here. And that's the beauty of it. And now you transition spiritually to do a beautiful third music video called One Earth. And this is a beautiful one in the sense that not only the entire presentation is just phenomenal in terms of the video side of the equation, but for the first time, you adding your voice to it. And I've always believed words have power, and you beautifully did this. So why don't we listen to One Earth, and then we'll come back and talk about it. How's that?
You mean I added my words to it, not
yes.
voice?
Yes. Yeah, yeah. I mean, the words, you know, the voice is a vocal, melodic, vocal, lyrical presentation now to One Earth.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Sure, let's listen to it.
Okay, great.
And the recognition that we're all a part of the strength, we're all one as it were.
Oh my God, look at that picture over there.
Earth coming up. Wow.
We
Wow, that's really beautiful, and everyone needs to see the video. It's very, very empowering, and that's the beauty of this song that really connects. And so coming back to our conversation, Kalyani, what spiritual awakening led you to transition from an operatic Gregorian classical musical style to a full vocal melody lyrical presentation in this beautiful latest release, One Earth?
Well, I don't think that required an awakening, but it was more serendipitous than that. It was just, you know, having, like I said, you know, I wear a lot of hats, and being a singer is not my focus. I sing when spirit wants me to sing. And mm-hmm. I go back to another question you had for me, which was, what makes me unique as an artist is that I don't sing to entertain. I sing to serve spirit and mm-hmm. the message that spirit wants me to give. And it's more like I use it as a carrier, as a vehicle for an important message that spirit's guiding me towards. And sometimes what, you know, instead of pursuing music, I allow music to pursue me mm-hmm. while I'm busy doing other things. And what happens is this particular story is interesting because it came to me unannounced, and I was attending a birthday party on Zoom in 2020 because, you know, we were going through that lockdown period, and and this friend of a friend introduced me to this project called Hands Around the World that Ken Cragen was spearheading, and Ken Cragen is a very famous producer and agent back in the old days, and he was the one who conceptualized the creation of We Are the World with Michael Jackson mm-hmm. and all those incredible singers that created USA for Africa as a foundation and organization, and that still generates funds to help Africa. And so I felt like the CEO kept saying on every meeting that I was in, because I was helping them, you know, with a project at the time, mm-hmm. and he kept insinuating that I would create a song for it because they had already some songs and some artists who created songs. But particularly the CEO, Neil, was not very happy with it, and he wanted more songs. And he kept saying, and I said, Neil, my song signature is not quite like that. You've heard what I do, right? And he said, but you can do it. I'm very intuitive too. I think you can create something for us. And I thought to myself, you know, first I was a little intimidated, first of all, to create something that has the flavor of We Are the World. This is something they were thinking of, something that is uplifting and, you know, brings. And I happen to listen to We Are the World a lot, USA for Africa. It's one of my playlists. And at mm-hmm. the time I was listening to it a lot. I feel like I attracted it out of the ethers because I was listening to that song a lot. I have three songs that I usually listen to just uplift my spirit in the morning. And I was doing that a lot at that time. And it's very interesting to observe that. And I said, you know, this is a good cause. This is about planet Earth. And, you know, I feel like as a voice, and I feel like I call myself a midwife to the sacred feminine in human conscience. And I feel like the planet is always also viewed, interestingly enough, as Gaia, the goddess Gaia, is as a feminine entity. And I thought to myself, why not? You know, this is not my musical signature, but it's such a beautiful cause, and it is about healing the earth and helping create awareness around sustainability and sustainable living, right? And cleaning up our mess. So I allowed myself to just, like I said before, allow the possibility of it coming to me. And I, through a period of a few weeks, just not sitting down and becoming mechanical about it. But while I'm gardening, while I was swimming, it was the middle of the summer, and I love swimming, and I have a pool, so I was swimming and gardening a lot. And we were on lockdown, so I spent a lot of time in nature and in water. And the song started to come to me, the lyrics and the melody all together without any instrumental, which was very unique. Before, I used to work with a composer. But both the melody and the lyrics started to download, and I started to write it down. And then I recorded to my phone. And that's when... It's not until then that we invited musicians to come and do arrangements, you know, musical arrangements. So it was very fun and very unique and different, you know, from what I do. But in a way, it's all about the message, right? We just are here to spread the good news.
Oh, yeah, definitely. I mean, that's fascinating. How can humanity benefit from listening to One Earth?
I hope that people will get inspired by understanding that we have done a lot already. There's a lot that's not in the news, like I like to say. But there is a lot of organizations out there doing tremendous amounts of cleanup. I'd like to mention some. There's many, many forestry organizations that plant trees. That it's extremely important because of all the devastation we've had with, you know, deforestation. And like One Tree Planted is a phenomenal organization. I really recommend you guys check them out. Just Google it, One Tree Planted. And you're going to be so inspired to see what these people have done. And it's people like you and I who woke up one morning and said, I want things to look different and be different. I want to help. This is really triggering me. And I'm going to channel this upset and this energy into doing good and changing so that I don't have to live with the thought that I'm hopeless and helpless. And there's another company that I really, really love. It's called The Ocean Cleanup. I really recommend you check them out. And this young man, 16 years old, was diving, you know, and he was in Greece, and he said, this is terrible. Can't we clean this up? And he went back home, and he went to high school, and he did a project on it. And today he has a huge company. He's in his late 20s now. And it's a beautiful story how he is cleaning rivers and the big garbage patch that's in the middle of the Pacific. I mean, he is doing miracles. And it's just one young man who just felt something needs to be done. So the song is to celebrate our capacity for transformation and for showing up in the world and just organizing ourselves and not waiting for it to come from somebody else. It's we're the ones we've been waiting for. That's one of the sentences in the lyrics. And we've unfortunately, unconsciously hurt the planet. We've created a lot of pollution in the air and the oceans, and now how can we come together and clean? Because this is our home, and there's only one of it. That's the only one we know. And so I hope people feel inspired to know that they matter. Every single choice they make is important, you know, and that there's much being done. And you can hop on the bandwagon and contribute however you see how to contribute.
No doubt about that. That's really beautiful. Yes, no doubt about it. Where can someone go to get more information about you? Listen and view the musical video and keep up with your latest happenings.
Just my website. It's a good place to start, you know, kaliani.com, K-A-L-I-Y-A-N-I.com, Kaliani. And, yeah, you can also, you know, go to Kaliani Music on Instagram or Facebook, Kaliani Sundari. And I always keep up with what's happening there.
Wonderful. What is next for you?
Huh?
What is next for you, project-wise?
Well, that I don't make plans. I just allow it to, I just allow the invitation to come again. But I have two new tracks that I'm working on. They're actually not new, but I have never released them. It's more in the flavor of the previous ones. We'll see. Maybe something's going to come up. I do want to do more music and focus more on it. So that's the feeling for now.
Wonderful. As we close this hour, since our show is about people, family, and living life, would you like to share a recipe for living with our listeners this morning?
Yeah, I feel that always move towards what gives you joy. Just move towards what, you know, at any point in life, you know, spirit just wants you to be happy. So if you feel overwhelmed, with life, try to create a little space every day to do something you love, and more move towards that, and always know that it's not what you do but how you do what you do that makes you special in the eyes of spirit, that makes you fulfilled, really. It's not what you're doing, it's how you're doing, why you're doing it. So do it for the joy of it. And I think, you're probably going to have a happy life.
Beautiful. That's really beautiful. Kalyani, thank you for the great recipe for living and for spending this hour with me. I'm from My Mama's Kitchen Talk Radio. To all our listeners, please join me next Wednesday morning, July 12th at 10 a.m. Central Time. My guest will be Karen Pudetti. Karen built a multi-million dollar beauty business from ground up and also has a highly successful clothing line, Bob Badass Clothing, Inc. The clothing line was started to build a foundation for ADHD kids. Karen and I will be having a conversation about her remarkable life's journey and her new book, Rags to Riches. For additional information about this show and future shows, please go to FromMyMamasKitchenTalkRadio.com. Thank you for listening and have a blessed week. Kalyani, it has been a pleasure. Thank you again and have a very blessed day.
You too. My pleasure. Thank you.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.